is with the select committee in the NCOP. Today he left us here with Mr. Frank, who works with them, with them. So I think we're fine. But I think what you need to do, because we didn't, it's long time that we have taken a rest. I mean, we've been putting this bill in the parking lot for a very long time. So I'm going to ask ask Mr. Mrotova to take us through that, you know, just a brief recap of what are the objects of this bill, and then again touch on the public hearings, what were the issues that were raised, and then from there we can chart the way forward. If that is in order, honorable members. The three of us. Good. So one of us is doing.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. We did a thorough briefing, and as the Chairperson instructed, the section that I'm going to prepare, those who are having a copy of the bill can go right at the back of the bill, which is the memorandum on the object of the bill, because what it does is that it captures briefly what we are intending to do. This bill, honorable members will recall that we had a Career Guidance and Placement Act, which was repealed when the Manufacturing Act was repealed, and in that place the skills development came into force. Now, employment services was governed by all the provisions of employment services within the department were provided for under the Career Guidance Act, which was subsequently incorporated in the Skills Development Act. Now, when the President in 2009, during the amalgamation of states, decided to transfer functions across departments, we're faced with a difficult situation where the two acts, the same act referred to the two ministers on different aspects. What the President did was to publish a proclamation that said this function will fall under this one minister and this other function will fall under another minister, and the state law advisors then subsequently instructed the two departments to then make sure that we have homes for the two functions, because they were falling under the same act. Now, in the process of doing that, we took those sections that remained within the department and incorporated them in the bill, including those provisions that actually covers productivity as a. And what informed the process? Now, the department, before doing this process, as part of the amalgamation of states, we got the services of the ILO to assist us in extensively reviewing the core business of the department or ministries of labor, so that we are much more refocused. But at the same time, to look at other ministries internationally, and they did a, they gave us about six key people from the headquarters in Switzerland who worked with us for a period of almost a year. And during that process, we reviewed a number of departments within the African continent. continent, European, Asian, and so on. And in the main, most of them focus on labor and social affairs. And among the key programs are employment services, inspection and enforcement, and labor policy and industrial relations, which is how we then also refocus our key activities. And there was an issue around the location, the precise location of UIF and compensation fund. And what we discovered in the process is that increasingly these entities have become labor activation programs, which forms part of the broader employment services. For instance, the UI in other countries is no longer an insurance. It plays a major role in the employment creation, something that honorable members, I'm sure, during your visit to Germany, you were able to come across, and the role of compensation fund. So we then decided on the four priority areas: employment, public employment services, inspection, enforcement, labor policy, and industrial relations. And those form the core of the Department of Labor's functions until today, and supported by the legislation that employment services, there was this gap in legislation that we had. And we also commissioned a research to the University of Cape Town, and also a law firm to review various legislation governing public employment services across the continent and in a number of countries. And that is where the origin of this bill came from after the whole process. What the bill seeks to do is to contribute to our government's objectives of more jobs and workers, which is the fifth, that is the fourth strategic core function of the current 5-year term of government. And it repositions the public employment services to play a major role in employment promotion and preservation, and to also assist employers and workers to adopt changing market conditions. It also aims to reducing unemployment, inequalities, and poverty eradication, promoting and preserving employment, reducing the reliance on the unemployment insurance fund and social security grant. That's where the whole concept of conditional grant comes in. In other countries, for you to access those grants, you have to go through a multiple steps, accelerating employment creation and employment growth and productivity promotion are among the key objectives. Now, we, in terms of the institutions within the department that are going to assist us to achieve those objectives, the intention was basically to, like in all other countries and in line with the number of ILO conventions that we looked at, was to provide a free public employment services to citizens, such as the registration for job seekers, placement opportunities, matching, and so on. And to also provide a framework where the public service works with the private employment agencies, especially with regard to the protection of vulnerable workers, because most private employment agencies are involved in business and they charge for these services. And I think, honorable members, if you recall your discussion around temporary employment agencies, you will recall that a lot of private employment agencies include temporary employment agencies that are involved in terms of the displacement of people, and they're involved in business. So there's a huge problem around how do we deal with this category of private employment agencies, given the market that they are operating in, pressure from the union for them to be banned and all that, because of the challenges that we are facing in the labor market. And to align In addition, this bill will allow the minister to issue regulations requiring drugs to register patients in specific categories of work. Now, there was a big debate on this section later on where we go in. The power is there, but in terms of the formulation, honorable members will point out when I deal with some of the submissions we get, how this issue was subsequently dealt with. And this was precisely to ensure the matching process to happen. It also provides the minister to introduce schemes to promote employment, especially for the vulnerable workers that we are finding very difficult to pay, to assist employees facing retrenchment to remain in employment during what we call the training period and so on, and to promote the rehabilitation and re-entry into employment of employees that are either injured on duty or those who have contracted occupational diseases, and this also extends to those people with disabilities that have developmental and psychodevelopmental in line with the United Nations Convention covering people with disabilities and providing special employment for those categories. It also provides the minister to introduce regulations dealing with the employment of foreign nationals to protect the conditions of employment in the country and those that are permanent residents, but also to make sure that the conditions are not less or more favorable to citizens. And that in the process of doing our work, the bill also clearly indicates that we have to collaborate with a number of entities to achieve this objective. Now, if I take honorable members clause by clause, Chapter 1 provides for the definition, purpose, interpretation and administration of the Act in the main. And the clause 1 is definitions. The way some issues raised during the discussions, and we have an issue that we have since noted around employment services to define it in line with the handbook. Clause 2 talks to the whole question of the purpose of the Act and the specific and institutional framing that is used to achieve the purpose. 3 talks to the interpretation of the Act with effective purpose. 4 provides for the administration of the Act by the Director General and how the Department will actually be resourced to perform its functions. Clause 5 provides for the functions of the public employment services that are to be provided free of charge, and those functions include matching and so on, as outlined in the list. The registration of vacancies, placing of work seekers with employers, advising work seekers on access to social security, specialized services to assist vulnerable workers, including youth, disabled people, facilitating change of information amongst labor market participants, career counseling, assessment of work seekers for those areas where vacancies have been registered, and the position of those skills. 6 talks to powers that the minister may have in terms of establishing schemes to promote employment, and this is one of the major areas of activity in other governments and countries where ministers of labor and through UI plays a major role over and above the public investment role in the employment scheme. prior to the transfer, this area was entered in transfer. And since the transfer, very little happened, and the Department of Education currently is in negotiations with us with the intention of giving us back the amount of money from the National Sports Fund to proceed with this program, given this impact. Some of you may recall in the old days, or since 2000, people who participated in about 860 such schemes used to earn something like 50 or 70 rand in line with the ministerial definition. In the olden days, people used to get 10 rand or 20 rand for participating in schemes that lasted for 3-4 months or so, and this involved bricklaying, carpet laying, painting, and so on. Those things that allow people to gain experience and allow them to get into such things. Seven talks to, eight deals with the whole question of foreign national regulation, and this is a big area which SADC is concerned about, even before the international conference on migration. The key issue here, honorable members, is that migration has proved to be just an area where you give visa and permit, and I'm sure when you appeared before yourself with the Minister of Home Affairs and colleagues from that department, increasingly they are saying this is a labour market issue, and ministers of labour or the Labour Portfolio Committee within the Department of Labour must take over and increasingly play a major role in this area, because people move from one country to the other in search of jobs, and where migration policies are tough, they resort to illegal means and they create all sorts of problems in the labour market, because once people are illegally in the country, they settle for inferior labour standards, and that on its own does have an impact on the devaluation, including the relations of citizens with foreign nationals, because others see foreign nationals as taking away their jobs because they are in that to settle for anything low, because they don't have the necessary paper, and that then extends to exploitation and so on and so forth. Nine deals with the Prohibited Act in terms of foreign nationals to try and deal with the issues that I was raised to assist Home Affairs, especially in making sure that employers who resort to employing foreign nationals do so through formal means, they have the necessary work permit, and they and at the end of the day, they don't use foreign nationals against local citizens and subject foreign nationals to inferior standards. 10 enables the minister to make regulations for the reporting and registration of new vacancies by employers, and this is precisely, this issue is very common when it comes to visa application, because employers would normally come with a request for, especially in the mining industry, because there is a different representation, they would come with a request to employ thousands of people from foreign countries, only to find that there was no process of actually an attempt to try and recruit locally, precisely because of those reasons that I've mentioned. 11 provides for the statistical information that the department may collect to inform the provision of employment policies. 12 talks to the sources of funding that can be utilized to provide employment services in the country. And this is where we identify a number of areas over and above the fiscal. ACU provides for the registration of private employment agencies and how the minister can go about regulating private employment agencies. And this clause is to one section 1.8 because the registration of private employment that is temporary employment agencies will now have to be done in terms of this act. 14 is the those acts that private employment agencies cannot rely upon. 15 prohibits private employment agencies from charging fees for services rendered by their exclusion services. 16 and 17 specify the information that this agency may keep, and 18 and 19 provide for powers and conditions under which the register can cancel private employment agency's registration, and also provide for a review process in case an agency that seeks information of a license or a certificate is satisfied with the actions of the register. 20 and 21 provide for the establishment of employment services board, its composition, and its function, and where the members are drawn from. Clause 22 provides for the function of the employment services board, and areas that they are supposed to advise the minister on. 23, 4, 5, 7, and 28 provide for the running or operations of the employment services board. How, for instance, it actually conducts its business, how members can be removed from the board, how they are supposed to be supported administratively, the remuneration for such board members for providing advice to the minister as determined by public executive department for public service and funding in line with all other special reports, and those that are excluded from the remuneration as well. Clause 29 provides that the funds of the board consist of money to proceed based on the budget rules, basically that is how the benefit of support is funded. And clause 30 deals with how the board is supposed to, on an annual basis, report to the minister on its activities. 31 and 32 provide for the establishment anew of Productivity South Africa, and basically what has happened here is that this section is taken as is from the Skills Development Act and is transferred to this act, because the president in the proclamation excluded it from the Department of Higher Education and Training, so it was one of those things that has been hanging. Clause 33 and 34 provide for the establishment of the Productivity South Africa, and 35 deals with the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer of the Productivity South Africa and its function. Clause 36 empowers the Minister to dissolve the board and the procedure for dissolution of the board and to appoint an administrator in those instances where the minister believes that the board is no longer fulfilling its function in line with its original mandate. Clause 37 and 38 provide for the qualification of board members from productivity as a board, then to mention to move on. 39 and 40 provide for the remuneration of productivity board, productivity board members. And clause 41 deals with the reporting obligation of productivity board to the minister and to parliament on its activities and how it accounts in terms of its budget. Clause 42 to 47, which is part of new chapter that was introduced, honourable members will recall, or if honourable members were to go into the annual report of the department dating back to, I think, 2005 to 2010, the AG raised this issue around the legal framework of service product factories, commonly known as sheltered employment factories, that in line with the Public Finance Management Act, any agency of the state that receives money from government must be established in terms of legislation. And these factories have been in existence for years, dating back to 1943, 1948, there were changes there, and over the years, the mandate has changed and they've moved from one department to the other. And 1994, they've been under the Department of Labor and they continue to be funded and regulated under the Public Service Act 103, 1994 provision. That is where the Minister of Public Service and Administration provided some kind of a framework on how these factories are to be managed. But still, Treasury, I mean the AG and Treasury was of the view that we fixed this problem. And Chapter 6 intends to solve that problem and to create a legal framework, because they fall within the ambit of employment services, and they provide employment for people with disability. And in looking at various legislation, we found how they are located in most countries, and we worked with the legal people to create a framework for that. So there is an issue, as honourable members know. We the name shelter was avoided in the bill precisely because people with disability objected and they looked warm to the protected employment services. But during the hearing the discussions we had with the Minister for Women, People with Disability, and the subsequent presentations that were made in Parliament, again, we picked up a strong resistance on the usage of protected, and people opted for supported factories in line with the United Nations resolution on people with disabilities. So protected wherever it existed or exists in terms of the bill. Going forward, we will have to be protected to that issue, because people with disability objected to the use. But for this presentation, we kept it because that is how it is in the field. What clause 48 does is, and I think the 42 to 47 provide for the mandate of the factories, how they are supposed to be managed, how they are supposed to also account. The legal framework that we were opting, were given a number of options in discussion with Treasury. That is for this factory to be Schedule 3 public entities, which is not for profit, or for this factory to be trading entities, or for this factory to Now, in looking at the various legislation that govern public entities, Schedule 3A, B or C, trading entities and government components, we felt that government components would best suit the format of this factory. And we have a business case that was done, which actually looked at the advantages and disadvantages. And in comparison, for this factory to operate trading entities, we found that there were seven, but in terms of government component, the advantages were 12, which is the reason why we opted there. And this honorable member talks to starting from a number of issues, such as the profit, for example, whether they keep this or the profit is used to offset their income. To give an example, if, for example, factories at the end of the financial year end up with 50 million and their subsidy was 100 million, and the budget for the next year happens to be 120 million. What it simply means is that Treasury can give them subsidy of 80 million as a government component to use the subsidy to offset them. Whereas if they operate as a trading entity, they have to be on their own and they operate at a profit margin and they keep their profit if their subsidy is fixed, it's really fixed. Or it gets reduced over time and all that. And what we have learned in the factories that we have been to in Algeria, Germany, and other countries is that the minute you remove that government support, just like government printers from the ambit of the state, technically they collapse. And you can as well let these people go off and a social grant. However, if the subsidy is maintained up to a certain level and they are properly managed, what we have also established is that it gives and boosts the self-esteem of people with disability, because instead of settling or remaining at home to receive the 1,280 or so social grants, in the factories they earn 5 to 6 times that amount of money. Transport, housing allowances, etc. Then people with disabilities opt to move out of the social grant system and to join the productive environment. And we are in discussion as we speak with social development because they want to move about 600 or so factories that they are subsidizing to either adopt or find a way that they can operate like our current shelters in the factory, because the model is not sustainable. People who are working there get a government grant and they also get a small margin of about 200 or 300 over and above their social grant, because the minute you earn above a certain threshold, you are taken off the system. Now, what that has done, unfortunately, is that it has opened up people with disability for exploitation. If some of you honorable members were to visit some of these factories that employ blind people, etc., under social development, you'll find that people buy the products they manufacture at very low prices, and they give them very, very little because they have to maintain that small amount. And at the end of the day, that is why social development itself is obviously that the model is no longer sustainable, because it costs them more to transport these people from homes to factories, and at the end of the day, they pay them a social grant and get $200. And that's the problem. So we tied our lives to all those problems. 48 provides for the jurisdiction of the labor court in respect of this. 49 provides for the monitoring and enforcement of this bill, in line with Schedule 10 of the basic conditions of 51 provides for the procedure by the minister of court when delegating functions to the PC, and clause 52 sets out issues in respect of which the minister may make regulations, and 53 provides for the repeal of laws and transitional provisions. As honourable members may know, that the current section that provides for the work that we do, when the Department of Higher Education took their bill to Parliament, they repealed all other sections, but they are waiting for this bill to be enacted so that they can then repeal those sections in their law. Currently, they can't, because if they do that, then we won't have a legislative mandate to continue doing what we have. So we have been lying with them on the provisions, and I'm sure the same notes that also check that the provisions as amended in the Student Development Act, when it comes to the field of law, they highly complement those of the Student Development Act currently formulated. And the clause 55, basically, is a short cut and connected. And the bill has got three schedules. The first schedule provides for the repeal of sections of the Student Development Act. Two talks to the transitional provisions relating to private implementation. So currently, we do have those regulations under the Student Development Act and Productivity South Africa, and three sets out all those contraventions in the sector of finance that the labor court may impose for contravening certain sections of that. So in a nutshell, honorable members, that is what the bill is all about. And I should pause, because subsequent to the provision, the presentation, honorable members, you called for representation, and we received a lot of them who came, who participated in the hearing, and then instructed us to go back and isolate those key areas within the number of issues raised, and then we came back and responded on how we thought we could best do it. Then maybe I should take a pause there, and then I don't know how we would need to do it.
Thanks for your comment. In terms of the region, it would be again my basic interference that we take up to the discussion of the friendly person to be considering the competition from the if it's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm going to remember some good features of the
is something that we also looked In terms of how the bill is described in Spanish, it makes reference to Section 5.1a to J of the bill and subsection 2. And now we then thought that when it comes to the different categories of work opportunities and so on, that is something that we could address under subsection 2 of the implementation bill. But this talks to the whole question of work opportunities. We have subsequently also looked at the convention and as we go clause by clause, the UN convention provides a precise definition that we want to look at, especially when it comes to private employment agencies. But broadly, we believe that the definition that we have on employment services under Section 5.1 is not the same kind of constitutional rights, the FWDplex Foundation raised the issue of definition of vulnerable workers. Now, this is is something that I'm sure you entertained during the Labour Nation in terms of and so on. And social partners were not in favor. And this is a principle that the members of the Labour Portfolio Committee want to look at, on the extent to which we define certain concepts. Because what we've since discovered is that unless we do a combination of various legislation that exist, different concepts are defined different. I can give an example around labor brokers in the Income Tax Act, in the Cooperative Act, and so on. And this definition caused a lot of problems. And social workers, I mean, social partners were all definitely that a number of concepts that are known and have been used by courts and used in various sectors and the broader understanding of what they mean. It may be better not to define them, and that is what is reflected in the network report that was presented to you. On the disability workshop development enterprise, they also wanted an issue of they had an issue around certain disability definition, and they also proposed a new definition. And what we were in agreement with is that the bill can be amended to make reference to the definition of personal disability as provided for in the implementing act. Because if there is an agreement that the definition that is in the implementing treaty is correct, we don't believe that we should go in and invent a new definition. We should just make cross-reference to the definition. Then there was an issue around specialized benefits that we should actually be defined, and this led to people with disabilities. And here they wanted us to mention, for example, work assessment, assisting supervisors, career counseling, job coaching, supported employment. Now, this issue is a very complex one in that the minute you put a definition that compels you to certain examples, you are then bound to provide them, and we basically believe that our definition on specialized services to include employment counseling, I mean the employment counseling concept is very heavy rock, and if you take employment counseling as a broad definition, it actually encompasses all those things, such as assistive devices. It's something that we used to provide under the Department of Labor, and it was very, very complex. And we felt that this can actually create a problem if we put that in a definition, because it is dependent on the allocation of the appropriate budget. So the broader definition is what we thought we should actually have. Now, I'm going to just give a number of definitions, because they're going to detail. We'll distribute again this copies, but UNISA also had an issue with definition of both implemented and vulnerable groups, and again, that was our response. The Construction Engineering Association of Labor Protection Division had an issue around temporary employment services obligation and responsibility. And the feeling was that we cannot come into the employment services and repeat what is in the Labor Relations Act, because the two acts complement each other. The cross-referencing is that what the Labor Relations Act basically says in terms of text is that the temporary employment services will be registered in terms of applicable legislation, and it does not absolve them from doing what they are supposed to do as defined in the Labor Relations Act. And therefore, their registration in terms of the employment services, because that section deals with the registration, and we believe that they should do what is contained in the Labor Relations Act. So we didn't want to cause that confusion, and we believe that the way we have worked with the lawyers and the way the functions of the TS are outlined in the Labor Relations Act Section 198 is sufficient. And the Labor Relations Act does not stipulate the registration process that is covered in the employment agencies, because most of these temporary employment agencies are also private employment agencies. They are private employment agencies that solely provide career counseling placement, but there are a lot of other private employment agencies that also have temporary employment services function of hiring people and letting them out to third parties, and so on. And that is where the registration and the regulation is centered in one piece of legislation. The South African Board for People with Practices had an issue around partnership, which we believe that was an operational matter. It doesn't warrant legislation, and already we're doing that with the association that is the Federation of African Professional and Staffing Organizations. Solidarity Trade Union basically said the ESB is a non-necessary piece of proposed legislation aimed at establishing state control, especially on private employment agencies and so on. And we believe that the statement is much more political than confronting the issue, because going back to the history of this country, and even prior to 1981, there were legislation that basically provided special services to white people in this country. And the history of the department is very clear in that it had a very, very big division that consumed almost 3/4 of the department's budget that was provided to government companies and so on. And I'm sure if you look at the convention, you have visited other countries, and I'm sure their statement challenged the again, they raised an issue around the possibility of conflicting roles, especially in terms of subsection 21F on facilitating access to training for work seekers. Now, the issue that they were raising was that that should be a SAQA or issue, but if we are to leave it broadly as we have it, then it should not necessarily be left only to training. We should be adding tertiary education as well, because they understand very well that the broader role of career or counselors or employment counselors, where people come in looking for jobs after assessment, in some cases a person may say, I want to be a pilot. Now, you can't just match a person with a pilot's job. We'll have to say, if you want to be a pilot, given your education level, this is the better name you have to do, these are the institutions that you have to enroll, and this is where you go, these are the people that you can contact for assistance and so on. So there's a referral component after counseling, and also to say, from your assessment score, we believe that you've got strength in this area, and if you are to do something along this line, because they require math, science, and whatever, we believe that you may be having good ambition, but wasting your time because your attributes may not necessarily allow you to proceed with this program unless you are prepared. And that is why we were saying we should be adding the component of tertiary education, which we are creating. The board of people practices were basically raising issues around access to training, and again, how we're going to work with SAQA in terms of career counseling, and again, we thought that there are a number of issues there that we need to because what they were doing at the same was that the drafting was poor, and we believe that I'm sure the state advisors will take up what they say, and that is something that they need to check. However, in terms of the core issues that they are raising, what we're basically saying is that there is an agreement between SAQA, the Department of Higher Education, Basic Education, and the Department of Labor on what each one's role is, that in the early childhood development and the basic education curriculum, we have got guidance classes where the teachers provide some learning in the career guidance. At the tertiary level, in DHET, there is career information and career development. Whereas employment counseling is broader, it's about employment choices, it's about information that we provide work seekers on a range of functions. And there are definitions that are being used in the document that has been produced to that effect. And we believe that the common missed or has not taken existing definitions on that. The case issue was basically questioning whether the department would be able to deliver given the resources that we have at our disposal, and whether partnerships would be necessary and so on. And again, this is an operational issue. The disability workshops, basically, again, it goes to that definition. Remember, when they raise a definition to give assistive devices, they also raise the issue that we omitted the funding of assistive devices because they wanted it to be included so that it's clear around how we are going to fund assistive devices. Now, the challenge here is that there are a number of players that are involved, and within the broad ambit of employment counseling, And we do have a section that provides for how the minister can assist people with disability, that is organizations of people with disability in the field. But this is over and above the sectors that we have and so on. And we didn't want ourselves to be tied to assistive devices because the history of managing this project was not an easy one. We used to buy wheelchairs, all sorts of things, and it became a very, very complex process because the organization is responsible for social development, and even Treasure was on our case on this issue. And you either have money up front or an agreement, or you have a broader principle embraced in the legislation, and depending on the funding availability, that we can then say this act is also about funding assistive devices for people with disabilities. So it's a broader sector, and we believe that it's something that we will not be able to do. On the Minister of Finance, this was the Western case. They basically raised issues around placement that this should be left to the private sector, and the question of the placement fee that this places the client as a financial disadvantage and increase the cost of labor. Now, the issue is that public employment services in their nation are free. And what you have to do is to deal with the question of charging. I'm sure honorable members are aware of a lot of stories where people are promised jobs and they're asked to put in 250 rand. You can imagine if you are guaranteed a job and people want 500 rand or 250. We've had so many cases of that nature where within something like an hour and a half from the time the advert went out. You can imagine if 1 million people deposit money of that amount. And we went on a number of buildings with the police only to find that just a fact, and there was nobody and the number was disconnected. And it was hacked from a public form. What they do is that they had a public form, they used the number, published it, and this and are actually continuing. Even after itself has been trying out to say one of the things that is not mentioned in the presentation, which is contrary to what the NK MEC was saying, is a strong regulation of the sector because of the abuse that is prevalent in the sector. And we believe that the existence of both public and private employment agencies working together in a format that is defined can deal with some of these problems because the conventions outline them. Then the Construction Engineering Association of Labor Broking questions the department's expertise, resources, and so on in respect of the TES management and e-lesson. And our belief was that that comment was has nothing to do with the BBC. It's more political, and if they were really specifically talking to a section of the BBC, then maybe it would help. But we also assess that capacity is something that is developed over time. It's something that has never been there and I think in terms of the bill and the funding framework, we're quite clear around how the activities of public employment used to be funded. The 10th Chamber of Commerce talked about the many schemes, and in the main, they were criticizing the training layer of schemes. Now, what people don't realize is that the schemes that we have was something that was reactive during the economic crisis, and we didn't have a legislative framework. And that is why we have run into all sorts of complexity currently, and that the funding seems to be a problem because it sits under various departments. And when Treasury comes to you, they want to know the legislative basis on which you are basing this progress on, because you are using state funding, etc. Although something that was collectively agreed, they did point out to us that, look, you've got a legislative vacuum to do what you are doing. And that is why in the management of the team, in some areas, there was an issue. But what they were questioning was that you are introducing this thing, and yet it has failed. But what they did not basically understand is that you needed the various legislative frameworks in order to actually implement the policy issues. And that is what most departments have actually established. On the case raised the issue of addressing the framework, which is the same response. BUSA broadly supported the bill, but what they were, they had an issue around the fact that protected enterprises, and in fact it was a mistake that we picked up in the bill, that the whole question of protected employment services, I think, in terms of subsection 7.1, we felt that, I mean, we believe that it should actually be deleted, because it was a mistake that the section was inserted. COSATU, basically, while they support the bill in its entirety, the issue that they were raising was that in appointing members of the Employment Services Board, the minister must consult that is level. And this has to do with the wording, because what the wording of the bill under, I think, Chapter 5, that is the section dealing with Employment Services Board, is that the minister, in appointing members of the board, will consider nominations forwarded to the minister by negligent constituency. Now, it's clear that the minister cannot necessarily appoint people that were not recommended to her by Netherlands. So we found that a submission to be contradictory, because we raised that issue at Netherlands. But I think the second issue that was of much more concern was that in dealing with the employment scheme and some of the policy matters, the minister must go back to Netherlands. And here there was a, if you look at the NEDLEC report, the issue was that if Labour agrees that members that are going to serve on the Employment Services Board are nominated through those organizations, firstly, the organizations recommend to NEDLEC, and the executive director of NEDLEC can forward names, and the minister appoints on those names. So those people are deemed to have been stakeholders serving on the board nominated through NEDLEC by their own constituency. So the issue is, if the board is dealing with the scheme, the very same board, the argument is that it must go back to NEDLEC. So it's like saying it must go back to itself and then discuss some of the nitty-gritty. And I think that that is where there was an issue, where business was saying, look, if you really want us to move, if that is how things are going to be done, you know, we spent 5 years discussing this thing going forward. So what's the point of having a board if you are going to have a board nominated to Netherlands to take everything, to be, if you end up taking things back to Netherlands? And then again, you find the very same people representing the same organization at network level debating the same issue or different people. So there's an issue of internal concentration and management amongst organizations. And our argument is that if honorable members were to look at the ECC, DCA, or in fact all the boards that are established in terms of labor legislation, they are all established through nominations that are received from members. And there is no instance where the minister will ever say, I don't like this person or so, because the nomination procedure here is that constituencies decide what names to NEDLEC, and through the appropriate chamber, NEDLEC then forward those names to the agents. So that's why we could not agree with you, because on the point that I think we also could not agree with it. Case also dealt with the issue around the Section 8.2 basically going to lead or drive towards xenophobic tendencies and so on, and they believe that it should just be scrapped. Now, this is one of those things. You don't do them, you are in trouble, you are damned. If you do something, you are also in trouble. Further, they've taken a decision that ministers of labor and home affairs must collaborate in managing this issue. There are conventions internationally, recently in Brazil, the convention. In November, the ILO will be debating this issue as well. And I think we believe that, in fact, the non-regulation is the one that is causing the xenophobic attacks, because if the foreign labor migration is properly regulated and the synergy also with the asylum system process, we believe that that problem will go away. In fact, we can share the report of the conference that we had a month ago of SADC, which came up with a number of resolutions around tightening regional migration management because of the problems associated with the issue and the movement of capital from one country to the other, and how they are also exploiting labor. And that goes with the whole question of talent to be maintained across the region. And in fact, under the AU is advocating for similar labor standards to be adopted across the continent, because the minute you have uneven standards in neighboring countries, capital relocates to one country, manufacture products that are sold in the other, and then they then exploit workers in one area and so on. And that is why the AU also is advocating for standards. The AU has mastered this issue, because it doesn't matter where you are, as long as you are in the EU member state, you subscribe to the same labor standards, same migration standards, and so on. And I think in the SADC region, there's a reservation of this, and none of the people believe that it will lead to xenophobia problems. In fact, the non-attended to this issue is leading to the conflict. The South African Board of People with Prejudices raised an issue around companies operating internationally, and this has to do with the work permit issue. Because in some cases we do have incidences of companies that would be having subsidiaries in Zambia, Zimbabwe, and all that. And the movement of workers in some of these countries becomes a problem. But the Migration Act does provide for how intra-company transfers can be managed, and we believe that issue is not a big issue in terms of this bill, because it was never the intention of this bill to manage migration in isolation of the regulation that currently exists under the Immigration Act. Center for Constitutional Rights again mentioned the issues of regulation again, it goes back to the foreign migration. Basically, what they were basically raising was that it is unconstitutional to give preferential treatment to South African workers at the expense of foreign workers, foreign nationals. Now, that are legally in the country. And I think there's a distinction between a foreign national that is legally in the country has got rights because those are in possession of the proper documentation. A foreign national that is not in the country illegally, that is what we were basically addressing. Now, a work corporate permit basically facilitates the foreign worker to be legal in the country, and we believe that the foreign national we're talking about those people who is not a South African citizen and does not have a permanent resident permit issued in terms of the immigration act, and we believe that their emphasis here was a little bit misplaced. And because the same issue raised by Vodacom, because any foreign national that has a residential permit cannot be discriminated against, because you have to provide them rights like any other citizens, and that is also under the Immigration Act. Again, I want to emphasize the Center for Constitutional Rights because it was on the same issue. But here the emphasis was slightly different, and they were saying that this act, if passed, is going to impact on local business because we will, in the short to medium term, replace illegal workers with suitable South Africans. Now, you can assist us. If somebody assists that, yes, I'm employing illegal, that's an illegal act. I don't think it's something that we should be entertaining in the first place. There's an acknowledgement on their side that if you take, or if the act is passed as is, it will depend seriously on illegal migrant workers that are working in the country. I think all of us are trying to address that problem. Ourselves and Home Affairs will say, if people are illegal, there are procedures in which people must go to Home Affairs to declare their status so that they are registered, they are given the necessary permits, and if they don't have the necessary documentation, there are procedures around how we deal with it. I'm sure this issue requires you more than us as the department, because the acknowledgement that you are dealing with illegal workers, it means that it's justifying employers who are involved in an illegal act, and the Immigration Act is very clear on this issue. Very often when we conduct inspections and go to farms, because of this whole question of having to make appointments, most of farmers will tip those workers that are illegally in the country to either absent themselves or not to turn up or to work in a division that will not be inspected. And this has always been our problem, because we will go there with Home Affairs officials and police and you will not find those people. And yet other workers will tell you that they are here, and because you made an appointment, they were told not to come to you. And you know very well, remember, if you raise these farms, there are issues around crime and all that, and having turned up in some area without an appointment, and where farmers will let dogs out of and so on, and shoot at our inspectors or you know, refuse to open because there were no appointment. Mm-hmm. And we have taken this matter up in the application, and I think, like I said, it's a broader political issue than we believe. The Institute of Race Relations and the Minister of Finance, the Absa Bank, also raised broadly issues around this whole question that is the obligation could prove more onerous than the any time requirements they had around employment of foreign workers. And again, it makes reference to the section. But we believe that every country, I'm sure all of you have traveled, just to get a visa for the United States is 18 pages.
Yeah.
When you are just landing, let alone staying in a country for a certain period.
Mm-hmm.
And for a country not to have systems of regulation of foreign workers, I don't think that is on. We are working with Home Affairs on this issue. Like we said, regional level, we are cooperating ministries of labor and social affairs and Home Affairs in the whole SADC region to make sure that there's synergy across our population and legislation and so on. So it's not only an issue. We have addressed it. Okay. The UNISA raised the same issue, which I should not repeat. The Cape Chamber of Commerce, Solidarity Center for Constitutional Rights, the WUSA, UNISA and others also talked to this issue around reporting of vacancies, and this issue was raised within NEDEC as well. Now, the issue here is that on one hand, we're expected to match jobs, people with jobs. Now, you cannot match people with jobs unless those jobs are registered. So the question is, how do you actually go about it? On one hand, and currently there's no obligation, but we are doing it because of the way in which we are providing the service. We've reduced cost to the employer, and employers are seeing the benefit of profiling people, and they are cutting down on the cost that they are paying to PA. Now, we agree that the obligation to give companies or for the minister to force companies to register may be problematic. That is why even the current bill, it doesn't say all companies may must. It says the minister may request companies to register. In fact, as we speak, that provision is as is in section 20, subsection 10, subsection 23 of the Skills Development Act. It's law. It's formulated as is. Basically, it provides for those instances where the minister believes that either companies are intentionally not willing to come forward, then the minister reserves the right to require them to do that. But before the minister does that, obviously there is a process of consulting the board on the regulation. And I think in the rear process, when they realize that this is already an act of parliament and that the act does not say must, there was no longer a debate on the issue. The South African Board for People's Practices had an issue around the whole question of information systems that we need to integrate, because they are quite aware that the absence of the labour market information is contributing a lot in terms of either students not taking appropriate careers and so on. So this was a complimentary comment and not necessarily anything that is objecting to anything in the end. the case against had an issue around money which are for specific purposes being used for PEP, and I think this has to do with the financing of public employment services, because this is also even at NEDLAC, there was also a disagreement. In fact, there are a number of suggestions that are coming up, because government and labor agree on the need for such funding.
My name is Mohamed Kweta, Fellow of Enterprises. Chair, on my side, Chair, I'd like to touch upon the issues that were raised during the responses by the department based on the public hearing, Chair. Your department did require our assistance on certain areas, Chair, that were raised. I'm going to begin, Chair, with your permission. Thank you, Chair. The first point, Chair, that was raised by one of the stakeholders was on the definition of employment services, Chair. And one of the stakeholders stated that since the definition of employment services lists certain issues, Chair, it goes as follows, Chair, that employment services include the provision of the following services, and then it lists up from A up until F. Now, Chair, the stakeholder said that the word include, Chair, is wide, Chair, and it may entail that there may be other issues that may be included, Chair, not listed from A up until E. Chair, I concur with that interpretation, Chair, because once you use the word include, it means that, Chair, in future, Chair, you may not be confined only to the areas specified in the deck, Chair. And the stakeholder share suggested that the word mean should be used. But share, it could be a political decision of this committee, share, whether to amend, include, and basically mean. But mean, share, would mean that interpretation would be narrow, share, and would be confined to only the issues listed in the text, share. And then there would be no way that the implementers of the legislation, share, would from any other issues that may arise in the future during the implementation, Chair. They will say currently the text refers to include, not mean, Chair. They will say I think it would be a political decision of the committee to amend, Chair, to include, to make it mean. And then the other issue, Chair, that was raised was in clause 5.1e, where the stakeholder states that the web seeker is excluded from being advised on access to education and training. Chair, the text correctly excludes a web seeker, Chair, in clause 5.1e. only provides for workers to be advised on access to education and training. Again, Chair, I would say, Chair, if the committee feels that the web seeker should also be included in this tech, Chair, I think it would be a policy decision, Chair, to include the web seeker as well as a worker. And then the other area, Chair, that was raised by the stakeholder was in relation to clause 8, wherein the stakeholder states that an offence with regard to an illegal foreign national is not included in the bill, Chair. Now, Chair, clause 8 provides for employment of foreign nationals, and if it one provides that an employer may not employ a foreign national in the Republic of South Africa, Chair, prior to the foreign national producing applicable and valid work permits issued in terms of the Immigration Act. Now, Chair, correctly so, Chair, the bill is current, Chair, does not provide for an offense if a person employs a foreign national without a valid work permit. But, Chair, we must also bear in mind that the text provide that this an employer may employ a foreign national share in accordance with the Immigration Act. Share the Immigration Act will only apply in respect of employment of a foreign national, which means that person must be employed in terms of a work permit, and that person and the employer must not employ a foreign national without a work permit. And share there are in section 49(3) of the Immigration Act. There is a provision, Chair, that provides for the offence and penalty, Chair, for an employer who employs an illegal foreigner in violation of the Immigration Act. And, Chair, there is also a penalty, Chair, for such a person if that person is found guilty of employing an illegal foreigner who is undocumented. Now, the Immigration Act, Chair, will only apply, Chair, in respect of such a person, Chair, such an illegal foreigner or such in terms of such an employer, Chair. Therefore, Chair, if the text is not contained in the bill itself, Chair, but in my view, Chair, the Immigration Act would always apply in respect of employment of a foreign national, Chair. Now, if we include it here specifically, Chair, in my view, Chair, it may be over-regulation, but it's already covered in the Immigration Act. And then the other issue, Chair, was on the issue of the cancellation of registration of private employment. And then one of the stakeholders stated that it's not clear in the bill, Chair, that a registered entity, a company, Chair, who is registered in terms of the Company Act, is already registered for running company, for running its own business, Chair. And then when that company is registered as an employment, the temporary employment service to conduct activities also of a temporary employment service as a private employment agent, Chair. If that private employment agent is deregistered, then the entity itself, the temporary says that if it is not clear, it will mean that the entity itself will collapse. But Chair, this particular entity, Chair, is only registered until the Company Act. In our view, Chair, if it is deregistered as a private employment agent conducting activities of the Zimbabwean Employment Service, it would not mean that it would be automatically deregistered in terms of the Company Act. There will be the deal with the separate regulation of private employment agencies performing temporary employment services, Chair, not regulating companies who are conducting their own business in terms of the Company Act. So the issues are separate, Chair, in my view. And then the other issue, Chair, was in clause 17(1)(b). Can we start with clause 17(2)(b), Chair, wherein the stakeholder stated that the information that means the requested by the department must be the employment information that is referred to in section 11. Now, currently the text in section department provide the necessary information. Now that is why the share. Now the stakeholder is suggesting that this necessary information shares with the information referred to section 11 of the or rather clause 11 of the current DHA. That is employment information. Now sir, I'm not sure the intention share whether the committee would consider including or referring to section 11 share and specifically say that the request for the department will be for on the on an employment or private employment agents will be confined to employment information contained in section 11 share or rather code 11 of the PM share. So I think that would be a positive decision share where to amend the rule to be as suggested by the stakeholder share to refer to code 11 temporary employment information. And then share there's also the issue of clause 21 share where the stakeholder comments that the net is not included share in the appointment process of the employment service board. But share if you look at clause 21(1)(c), NetLeg is involved share in the appointment by the minister share of members of the employment service board. The board consists of the following suitable persons appointed by the minister, and then C says three persons from each of the following constituencies nominated by NetLeg: organized labor, organized business, and organizations of community and development interests. They will share NetLeg is involved in the process of appointment of members of the Employment Services Board. And the share the other last issue share that was raised by one of the stakeholders share is in clause 52(1)(g). The stakeholder share is concerned that the provision share is currently is wide share. The stakeholder share is stating that although let me share the read what the current section clause 52(1)(g) states check. It says that the minister may, after consultation with the Employment Services Board, make a regulation relating to any other matter relating to the provision of public employment services or the regulation of private employment agencies. Now, the stakeholder share says that this power is open to further discussion, and it has been held that Parliament may not delegate wide capital power issue to a minister. That is what the stakeholder is concerned about, Chair. Now, Chair, I think, Chair, the stakeholder here is referring to a judgment, Chair, the president, judgment. In this judgment, Chair, apparently, there was a challenge on the Road Accident Funds Act regulation, Chair. And Chair, there was an important provision in that particular Act, Chair, which states that the minister shall or may make a regulation to prescribe any matter which in terms of this Act shall or may be prescribed, which may be necessary or expedient to prescribe in order to achieve or promote the object of this Act. Now that was the empowering provision. And now the minister made regulations supposedly in terms of this empowering provision, Chair. And then that regulation 21D, Chair, in terms of the empowering provision, stated that in the case of any claims for compensation referred to in Section 17 of the Act, the funds are not liable to compensate any third party unless the motor vehicle concern came into physical contact with the injured or deceased person. The law also notes that the certain the regulations that was made, actually important provision, precluded liability of the road accident fund from liability if there was no physical contact with the injured person. Now, Chair, the state, the court stated that this regulation is ultra-violent, Chair, because there was no express provision in the body of the Act that specifically allowed the minister to regulate on this particular issue, Chair. I think the stakeholder, Chair, is referring to that the state is not commissioned, but not, in, not, specific, not expressly. Now, Chair, if we look at the bill itself and the text of the regulation 52.1G or the clause 52.1G, Chair, the provision says that the minister needs regulation on any other matter relating to the provision of public employment services for the regulation of private employment agencies. Now, Chair, if we apply the precedent of case to this, bill, Chair, you must note that in the body of the bill, Chair, the minister, he is a proposal that the minister must make but prescribe that a regulation, Chair, on public employment services and also prescribe criteria on private proposal for the registration of private employment agencies. Therefore, Chair, in the body of this particular bill, Chair, there is or there are express provisions that relate to the provision of public employment services and a regulation of private employment agencies. Therefore, Chair, in my recent appeal, Chair, that the current provision, the current text of 52.1G is not too wide, Chair, as to give the minister unlimited power delegated by Parliament to make any regulation, Chair. It's rather confined, Chair, to regulation regarding the provision of public employment services and the regulation of private employment agencies as expressly provided in the code of the future. So, Chair, in my view, in my humble opinion, I would say the texture is historically passage, everything covered at the moment. And then the last issue I'd like to touch upon is one issue that was raised by one stakeholder, Chair, about the convention for persons with disabilities, Chair, that the bill is not really aligned to the provisions, Chair, of that convention. But, Chair, in terms of that convention, Chair, especially Article 27 of that convention, Chair, it provides for the work and employment of respect of persons with disabilities. And it states that the state party, which means the Republic of South Africa, Chair, as well, which is accredited to the convention, must promote employment opportunities for persons with disabilities. Now, Chair, if you know that the current clause 43 of the bill, Chair, the 43 B and C, Chair, this provision, Chair, they do provide that the protected employment enterprises, Chair, must promote employment opportunities and also programs to promote employment opportunities for persons with disabilities. And this is aligned, Chair, to the convention and on giving effect to Article 27 of the convention, Chair. So, Chair, those are my input at the moment, Chair. Thank you.
In terms of the private employment services or agencies that will be that needs to be registered. In terms of the model and their regulation, what are the stipulations that precisely says the private employment agencies need to register and confine themselves in these processes in tabulation, so that I understand. That's just my issue, because I'm raising this because we've had a problem with private employment agencies which were operating in a way that was not okay in terms of the people that they employ. Some of them are not even registered, and this we say brought about the labor brokering business and so on. So if they are going to be registered, what will be their operations, and this is how they should operate and find themselves working with the public employment agency and so on. Just a brief explanation. I think I did not capture him well in that regard.
The bill does provide for regulation, and we have
embarked on a project recently with the Germans, because in Germany there is a whole range of all the organizations trying to understand the mechanisms that they use to do the registration to enforce compliance and so on. And they use various incentives and models to make sure that this organization complies. The only area that we are basically worried about that we must raise with this committee, and given the work that we have been doing on the employment equity, is that the funds in case of non-compliance in terms of the price are low. And that may become a problem where non-compliance happens, because some of them may simply budget them, you know, 10, we would say 50,000, you know, so on. So that's the area that, I mean, we raised this issue at NEDLAC also, that one of the things that is also contributing to non-compliance has to do with the fines, but also issues around fines when you discuss them with justice and other areas. There are all sorts of complex issues around cases, etc. But I think one of them that is going to be a big test on us. In fact, Labour used that point to say, we are telling you that's the reason why we are saying regulation will not work. Rather go for the, you know, broader banning or whatever, because of precisely that problem. But looking at the various methods, incentives, and the way other countries have approached this issue, we believe that we'll go along, we will not solve or eradicate the problem completely, but we believe that with the measures that we are putting in the regulations and the pilot that we are going to run, we may force a substantial number of those agencies to comply. In fact, also, one thing that is not also in the deal was proposing that the registration of these agencies includes some kind of monetary component, which will then be used to assist inspectors in terms of ensuring compliance, given the insufficient resources that we get from Treasury. And the association itself of private employment practitioners is in favor of that, and obviously they have selfish reasons, because they want the amounts to be high. Big companies obviously will not have a problem. The problem may be with the small companies that will come to the site. But they will basically say, you need to generate substantial amount of resources to ensure or to enforce compliance. And that is the other thing that we are also looking at. And linked to that, I know the State Department has been mentioned, but what we have also found, which is something that is during the line-by-line discussion that we will be proposing, is the notion of a temporary registration certificate. This, honorable members, has to do with a situation where, let's say, the criteria that you meet, these are 10 things that you must do for you to be registered, and one company has got 7 or 8. Now, it's like when you have your own car, which you do 6 second things, but then you still get a temporary license that allows you to drive this car up to a certain point. And up to a certain day within which you are supposed to go back to test it so that you can get a full certificate. And in the German system and other countries, what we discovered was that was an omission on our part, because what it would simply mean is that we either certificate or we don't certificate.
active certificate. And the notion of a provisional certificate is something that may be needed to cater for those instances where somebody has demonstrated the need or physical commitment to comply, but there are certain things that are lacking that we then issue a certificate and a timeline within which they are supposed to have actually submitted outstanding documents for them to qualify for the fully fledged certificate. So that's why we are the reason that we may also be dealing because of the complexity of dealing with this TIF. I think the outcome of the labor relations and the GA discussion and the fact that it put the obligation for us to register brought about another dimension that I also going to add some level of pressure on both self and inspector.
This letters were not discussed in the meeting. And I just by take it for granted that you took and team will include them so that when we meet they will be in our ages. When we will be in children. And that the ages should be separated on or before Monday. So that we are able to go through for the information. If there are no any other issues that come up in the family, I just feel in that way. Unless if there are other questions. Why don't you stay in contact? That's why.
I'm thinking of the process. What is it that we are anticipating to do next week? Because when these two pieces of legislation, these amendments, both in profit equity and assets, were brought to us at the same time, and then we had public hearings at the same time, and the responses by the department as a result of the public hearings at the same time. And then we left employment services bill after that, and we moved with employment equity, which we will tomorrow.
We'll tackle tomorrow, yes.
And no party will send its members out of the house when the bill is supposed to be passed. Because if they do, they're demonstrating to the voters out there that they don't want to change the lives of the people all the time. Yes. So you know, the issue for me, Chair, is we haven't had time as the committee now to debate in order to get to what is it that we deal from. Because if we take the cue from the other bills that were presented, starting from the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, we use in discussion, go clause by clause in order to find each other, followed now by us agreeing on the clauses that reflect in the bill. So in a way, I'm trying to propose that can't we take that format, even with this bill? Because I want to make sure that which clauses do we agree with Reverend Tao, which clauses we don't agree, and then prepare
forward
for a fair fight. If I may put it that way. Thank you, sir.
We are going to go to love by law.
Okay.
And then from there, generate an energy spark.
Yeah.
And then from there, then we go to love by law.
And we vote.
And then vote on the law.
Yes. Okay. And you must vote properly this time.
Don't chase your members out.
And let the beauty people come to the house. In those ways, I never
remember.
Wait a minute, why are you not eating this thing? She's taking a bite now.
I'm not decorating.
Yeah.